and also what the animal looked like. The trouble is, you would have to have been there to see the animal to know the detail. Now, the Bible is the word of one who's always been there, and it gives us details of the past so we can understand fossils. There was no death before Adam sinned. Noah's flood was a real event. Now, that helps us correctly explain fossils.
Is this stuff on the level, or you're just making it up as you go along?
What do you guys think of plastic sushi?
I think you shouldn't eat it.
Plastic sushi of the gods.
Plastic.
Strawberries.
This is Dan Dennett, and you are listening to Plastic Sushi, Strawberries, and Time, that crazy, mixed-up, mutant, freeform sound collage on WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM, Tufts Educational Radio.
Evolution. Well, if you accept the Bible as God's word, you must believe that all human beings are descendants of Adam and Eve. If all human beings who've ever lived aren't descendants of Adam and Eve, then the whole gospel message actually falls apart. If all human beings who've ever lived aren't descendants of Adam and Eve, then the whole gospel message actually falls apart. And the whole gospel message actually falls apart. The whole gospel message actually falls apart. The whole gospel message actually falls apart. The whole gospel message actually falls apart.
You're listening to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time sound collage. That's right. It's not just a radio program. It's a sound collage. And in this episode, we're exploring evolution with Darwin's pit bull, evolutionary evangelist and Oxford scientist and author Richard Dawkins, along with that crazy young Earth creationist Ken Ham. That last set commenced with The Spiders, a Japanese band from the 1960s. You can categorize them in the Japanese group sounds genre, so-called garage band. That was their Monkey Dance from the outstanding compilation album GS I Love You, Japanese garage bands of the 1960s. They ultimately put out two volumes of that, and both are highly recommended. And then we heard another selection from the Bryan College Archives. That was Billy Rose and You Can't Make a Monkey Out of Me, followed by Wendy Carlos's groundbreaking 1968 production of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 in G major, the Allegro. Actually, it was the whole album switched on Bach in 1968. That showed the world exactly what a Moog synthesizer was capable of. And even though a lot of classical purists were not amused, it eventually went on to become one of the biggest selling classical albums ever. And we followed that with some more Japanese music from the Yoshida brothers, Kodo. And then we finished things off with Super Creep's song, Evolution, from their Ebonious album. Our ambiance right now is coming to us from Vangelis, as has all of our ambiance so far, from his perfect Soil Festivities album. This is Movement 3. I've been absolutely privileged to participate in 8 full semester courses here at Tufts with Professor Daniel Dennett, my intellectual idol. It's been an absolute privilege to have learned from one of the world's leading intellectuals. He's the best teacher I've ever had. Every single course was just incredible, but there was one that really stood out more than the others. It was in 2015 on cultural evolution. There were only about 15 other people in the class, and we usually all sat around the table. Plus, I volunteered to make audio recordings of all the classes and post them for the other students in case they miss a class. To summarize, in life and nature, there are genes, and then there's the environment. But in human societies, there's one more critically important factor: culture, which broadly includes our technologies, our arts, music, customs, languages, stories. And those really shape us as human beings. The topic of this course is whether culture evolves, and I'll tell you, the answer is certainly yes. And then next, how? In a Darwinian sense, survival of the fittest? The fittest what? Ideas? Memes? There were so many things we talked about and tried to figure out. In any case, one of the topics was Acheulean stone hand axes, which were made by human predecessors from about 1.7 million years ago to about 300,000 years ago by chipping stones in a particular way. For more than a million years, they were made and they changed relatively little in design. And for about a million years, they were the most advanced technology on this planet Earth. I started researching them a bit more on the web, and I was pleasantly surprised to find that so many of them have been discovered, that they're actually surprisingly affordable. I bought one from an antiquities dealer. It was found in Morocco and dates around 1.5 million years ago. Although, it could be off by a couple hundred thousand years, plus or minus. It was most likely made by one of our extinct pre-human ancestors, species called Homo erectus. I'm holding it in my hand right now, and it's remarkable to think of that human creature, not Homo sapiens, but definitely a human creature who made it and used it so long ago. There's some controversy about how exactly these things were used. When the edges were freshly flaked off, they'd sure be sharp, and they could be used for cutting through flesh and wood. But even with dull edges, throwing them could sure do a lot of damage as a projectile. There are sites in the Sahara Desert and many other places where there are essentially huge piles of them. But back then, the environment was different, and the Sahara was at times a lot more hospitable.
One theory for some of these sites is that there were rivers flowing over them at the time, and these ancient prehumans would hang out waiting for other animals to come and drink the water, which of course most creatures need to do. And then those animals could be killed by throwing potentially many of these stoned hand axes at them. But a lot of them probably got lost in the river, eventually covered up, buried. And then, over time, many, many years later, the surface eroded away, and modern humans came by, picked them up, and sold them to collectors. This Acheulean stoned hand axe is a fascinating artifact to hold and ponder. The dealer I bought it from has an eBay storefront. They had a kind of standard listing stating its condition. Used. Oh boy, is it. Manufactured and first used about 1 million years ago. And quite literally, from the Latin, manufactum, made by hand. In the next set, we're going to be hearing another selection from the Bryan College Archives called Bryan's Last Fight. Also, some gamelan music from Bali overlaid with Professor Daniel Levitin explaining more about music and human evolution. And then we're going to follow that with a Blue Oyster Cult song produced by Grammy Award winner Daniel Levitin. But first, here's a song I'm sending out to my fellow WMFO DJ and Devo aficionado, Chris Major, host of Strike the Box. Here's Devo with Giacomo on the Plastic Sushi Strawberries and Time Sound Collage here on WMFO in Medford. Tufts freeform, non-commercial, community, and even sometimes educational radio.
We are evil. I don't care if your daddy plays golf with the president. This is intelligence. So far, I haven't seen any.
There's some things you're not meant to know.
So, in the kinds of ways that music was used in the 2000s, singing and dancing occurred together, and they went on for hours and hours on end in most typical, pre-industrial societies. And what the dancers and singers were indicating was, stamina for one thing. Perhaps the males were indicating how staminous, if that's a word, they would be while out on the hunt, right? The males wanted to demonstrate that they had a great deal of vitality and creativity and energy, and the women can't necessarily follow them on the hunt to observe this, so they have to do something that kind of shows their manliness in a confined, constrained setting. Music and dance would indicate that. But also, music and dance really does indicate a level of fitness and flexibility to be able to sing and dance for hours on end, coming up with endless variations of the routine, changes in the melody. You can't fake this. You have to really be in good condition. You have to have access to a lot of nutrition. You have to be well rested. You have to have no neurological disorders in order to pull this off. That's what biologists mean by an honest signal. You can't fake it. The classic example of an honest signal in biology is the peacock's tail. You probably all know this story, but the idea of the peacock's tail is it's this bright, colorful, showy display that the peacock creates only at great metabolic expense. It takes a lot of nutrition, a lot of vitamins and minerals to maintain the colors. The thing's heavy to carry around, so it takes some strength. And, as if that wasn't bad enough, this thing attracts predators, right? And so the peacock has to be able to run quickly and be agile and clever in order to escape predators. All this is an honest signal to the female, because she recognizes that, you know, if he's not fast or agile, he's not going to outrun the predators. If he doesn't have good nutrition, the tail's not going to be colorful. And so it's a sexual display saying, hey, I'm healthy, I've got good genes, you should choose me. And this is evolution's way of indicating fitness. Again, it's an honest signal. You can't make that tail unless you have the nutrients. Similarly, you can't continue to make music and dance, at least in the ways it was made over evolutionary timescales, unless you were healthy and had some cognitive fitness and ability. The other thing about it is that we seem to all have an exquisite ability to detect when a musician isn't really feeling it. Now, it's not perfect. We can be fooled. But most of us are really good at knowing when a singer isn't being sincere. At least we're much better at detecting that than detecting when a speaker, when your speech isn't being sincere. It's why in an election year we're so easily deceived or persuaded by somebody who's got a good story or a cute little wink or, you know, a number of other devices that orators use in order to get their point across. You know, there's always this arms race between honest signals and one's ability to detect cheaters in a biological system. And at this point in history, there are a lot of liars around. There's con artists, there are people who lie and deceive either for personal gain or for whatever reason. And our ability to detect that, in language anyway, isn't as sophisticated as their ability to dupe us. But with music, it's much more difficult. I mean, just imagine whoever your favorite singer-songwriter is, whether it's Joni Mitchell or Ella Fitzgerald or Alanis Morissette or Portishead. If you've got, people who like these artists talk about the sincerity that they feel in the voice. Now, if one of those singers said to you, I was just kidding, I never really meant it, I was faking it the whole time, I was only in it for the money, most of you would say, oh, I can't listen to that anymore. Tens of thousands of years, human kind didn't have writing. So if there was important information that needed to be preserved, shared with others, passed down to your children, you couldn't write it down. You had to memorize it. Even by the time of the Greeks, there were these great academies devoted to mnemonic techniques and memorization. Memory was a high art form. We don't do that anymore. We don't have to. We've got PDAs and cell phones and paper and pen and typewriters and computers and a lot of different ways to encode information. But for most of our history of the species, well over 98% of the time humans have been on the Earth, there was no writing. So the way that we dealt with it was to memorize things, and our early ancestors realized that setting text to music made it easier to remember the words. The internal structure of music, the accent structure, the meter, the rhythms, not to mention the poetic elements of alliteration and rhyme, when you use those, they constrain the possible words that will fit. There are only so many words that can fit into a song based on the number of syllables and these other constraints. So, and we see, you know, for tens of thousands of years, our ancestors had songs to tell them important things like which plants were poisonous and which were not, how to preserve the meat so that it won't spoil, how to dress a wound. That doesn't sound like a punk album. I don't know what it is. Probably is the name of a punk album. I mean, you know, you have a wound, what herbal remedies to put on it to avoid it being infected. Important survival information, which animals are dangerous, things like that, would have been encoded in songs. And we see the vestiges of this today. Still, there are a lot of knowledge songs, not as many as there used to be. You go to pre-literate cultures and you listen to their music, which you can easily do now via the internet. intrepid musicologists have gone to all corners of the earth and brought back some of these wonderful songs. And you can hear, translations provided, that a lot of these songs are about knowledge, totally important information. And we have them. We have them as oral histories, like the Ballad of the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, or the personality portraits, like the Ballad of John Henry. Children's songs, Cruella de Vil, personality portraits, a knowledge song. And, speaking of children, most children still learn the alphabet to a song, right? And they learn their body parts that way. And Shoulders, Knees, and Toes is a famous song, and there's Schoolhouse Rock and Sesame Street, and a number of ways that children learn what they need to learn through music.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
You're tuned in to WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform, non-commercial, community, and even sometimes educational radio. This is the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time Sound Collage, and our theme for this episode is evolution. We commenced our last set with Devo and Jaco Homo. From their Brian Eno-produced album, Are We Not Men? We Are Devo. And then it was a historical selection from the Bryan College Archives on another aspect of the 1925 Scopes Monkey Trial. That song was Bryan's Last Fight. And then a genre jump over to some gamelan music from Bali. That song was Jaran Teji, performed by Kekak Bali Selatan. And mixed on top of that, we heard from best-selling author, neuroscientist, and Grammy Award-winning producer, Daniel Levitin, talking about music and human evolution. Then we followed that with a song he produced for the band The Blue Oyster Cult. That was Take Me Away, from their Workshop of the Telescopes album. Meanwhile, behind me right now, our ambiance is the fourth movement from Vangelis's Soil Festivities masterpiece. We got one last set for you. And to begin with, we're gonna monkey around a little bit with the Japanese artist Takyu Ishino and his monkey dance. But before that, we're going to start off with our final historical selection from the Bryan College Archives. Here's Monkey Out of Me.
Men fear is a spent on the origin of man. Some can trace our name to the family tree. But for me, I'm content with the blessed Bible plan. And you can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me.
Oh, no.
You can't make a monkey out of me. No, no, I am human through and through.
All my aunts and uncles too.
And you can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me.
Oh, no.
You can't make a monkey out of me. No, no, I am human through and through.
All my aunts and uncles too.
And you can't make a monkey out of me. Some believe that the earth started from a little spark, but they can't tell whence came the spark, you see. Many folks had no birth prior to old Noah's Ark. And you can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me.
Oh, no.
You can't make a monkey out of me. No, no, I am human through and through.
all my aunts and uncles too. And you can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me.
Oh no.
You can't make a monkey out of me. No, no, I am human through and through. All my aunts and uncles too. And you can't make a monkey out of me. If a man ever came from a monkey, as some say, they'd be coming now and would ever be. But mankind is the same in all ages as today, and you can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me. No, no, I am human through and through.
All my aunts and uncles too.
And you can't make a monkey out of me. You can't make a monkey out of me.
Oh, no.
You can't make a monkey out of me. No, no, I am human through and through.
All my aunts and uncles too.
And you can't make a monkey out of me. Nor you can't make me out of a monkey.
You led me around on a leash.
That was different. We thought you were inferior.
Now you know better.
If any species in the history of life has the possibility of breaking away from short-term selfishness and of long-term planning for the distant future, it's our species. We are Earth's last best hope, even if we are simultaneously the species most capable of destroying life on the planet. But when it comes to taking the long view, we are literally unique, because the long view is not a view that has ever been taken before in the whole history of life. If we don't plan for the future, no other species will. There's a tension between short-term individual welfare and long-term group welfare or world welfare. If it were left to the forces of Darwinism alone, in one sense, there could be no hope, because short-term greed is bound to win. There is a hope that lies in the unique human capacity to use our big brains with our massive communal database, all the libraries, all the computers, all the knowledge that we've built up over the generations, and our forward-simulating imaginations. This is what things like the Kyoto Accords and similar initiatives are all about. But to a Darwinist, it's not surprising that it's so hard to get agreement in support of such political initiatives. Darwinism is unfortunately not friendly to the values of sustainability, the long-term values of life as a whole. To the extent that our values stem from Darwinian selection of our ancestors, this would seem to be a pessimistic conclusion. The only solution to problems of sustainability, things like that, is long-term foresight. And long-term foresight, as I've said, is something that Darwinism in itself doesn't have. Well, I've said that hope lies in our unique human capacity for foresight, but how, you might ask, do we manage to have foresight, given that we ourselves are products of Darwinian natural selection, which only favors short-term goals? And some people have even complained of what they see as an inconsistency, or even illogicality, in the position that I'm adopting. How can I, on the one hand, say that we are the products of Darwinian selection, which is incorrigibly short-sighted and selfish, but at the same time say that salvation lies in humanity's capacity for looking far ahead? And the answer lies in the fact that brains, although they are themselves the natural products of natural selection, follow their own rules, which can rise above the rules of natural selection. This is obvious in the case of the example of contraception. Contraception is clearly anti-Darwinian. It would be hard to imagine anything more anti-Darwinian than deliberately limiting your own reproductive success, yet we do it. The brain is big enough to override the imperatives of the selfish genes. The brain exists originally as a device to aid gene survival. The ultimate rationale for the brain's existence, and for its large size in our own species, is, like everything else in the living world, gene survival, which tends to imply short-term selfishness. But as part of this, the brain has been equipped, the human brain at least, has been equipped by the natural selection of genes with the power to take its own decisions, which can override the ultimate goals which were originally used to program it. We can take decisions which are not based on the ultimate Darwinian value of gene survival, but upon other proximal values, such as hedonistic pleasure, or such as something more noble, something such as sitting down together with people of the world and trying to plan what would be the best future for the whole planet. Totally unique, totally foreign to our evolutionary past. Darwinian selection of genes originally built into our brains primitive values such as hedonistic pleasure, orgasm, or enjoyment of a sweet taste. But it is an evident fact that the brain, especially the human brain, is able to override its ultimate program, to dispense with the ultimate value of gene survival and substitute other values, including, of course, things like love of art and music, which Patrick Kilby's friend was so wrongly ashamed of. And among these values is, of course, the long-term survival of the planet and other things for which Greenpeace has so single-minded struggles. So my conclusion is that the natural, at least the natural of natural selection, has few virtues that we would wish to import into our human political attitudes. It has been a part of our life for most of our ancestry, but we would be well advised to, in a sense, mistrust it, even fight against it. I said that although I am a passionate Darwinian, in the academic sense, that I believe that Darwinism is the main ingredient in our understanding of our own existence and that of all life, I am a passionate Darwinian in that sense. Yet, I am a passionate anti-Darwinian when it comes to human, social, and political affairs and political planning for the world. Nature really is red in tooth and claw. Nature really is ruthless, selfish, greedy. Nature, in its Darwinian role of natural selection, is not something we should wish to emulate.
You maniac! You blew it up! Oh, damn you! God damn you all to hell!
His hands paint the flowers. He puts leaves in the trees. At his whisper, birds start singing. When my heart needs melodies, why I stray from all his goodness, my poor mind can't understand. I'm to blame for my misfortune, I lost hold of his hand. Those hands still give me mercy, though I'm wrong as wrong can be. If they really gave me justice, I'd be lost on homeless seas. I've been lost in the shuffle. I've obeyed the wrong command. I'm going back to the chapel in search of his hand.
Those hands still give me mercy,
though I'm wrong as wrong can be.
If they really gave me justice,
I'd be lost on homeless seas. I've been lost in the shuffle. I've obeyed the wrong command. I'm going back to the chapel in search of his hand.
Through the process of evolution.
Responsible, receptive, reusable. This is the Universal Media Network.
Scientists
plug up
say,
your ears and cover up your eyes because it's all in your head, FM.
Scientists say, the human brain continues to change through the process of evolution. Scientists say the brain has evolved about as much as it ever will.
Are you missing the experience of live music? Well then, tune in to WMFO in Medford on Saturday, September 18th from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. where here on our 91.5 FM airwaves, you can hear the following musicians: Arthur Nassan, Bird Mancini, Crow Follow, Jennifer Truesdale, Katie Dobbins, Little Billy Lost, Mike O'Brien, Neon Gypsy, Peter Parsec, Roberta Lamb, Scott Damgard, Smitty Smitty, and the Cast Irons. Yes, for a full 4 hours this Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., you'll hear live recorded performances by all these great local artists. Only here on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform, non-commercial community radio.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Plastic Sushi Strawberries in Time sound collage. That's right. It's not just a radio program. It's a sound collage where this week we've been mixing up a lot of talk about evolution from Oxford scientist, author, and Darwin's pit bull, Richard Dawkins, along with some excerpts from a talk by author, neuroscientist, and Grammy Award-winning record producer Daniel Levitin about music and human evolution. Plus, we've also been hearing from that crackpot young Earth creationist Ken Ham, founder of the Creation Museum, a believer that the Earth was created by God within the last 10,000 years, and that every word of the Bible is literally true, along with a bunch of clips from the original Planet of the Apes movie starring Charlton Heston and Roddy McDowell. We began our final set with a song coming out of the 1925 Scopes Monkey Trial. That was A Monkey Out of Me, which I found at the Bryan College Archives. And then we heard Takuya Ishino's Monkey Dance. Takuya Ishino has been a critical member of the Japanese band Denki Groove, as well as an accomplished solo artist. Thanks going out to Billy Bob Neck, WMFO's most controversial DJ ever, for that song by Tennessee Ernie Ford, His Hands. We heard from Negative Land, a sound collage about evolution. That was recorded live at the Middle East nightclub in Cambridge by Chuck Yu. The event was called It's All in Your Head. And then it was the legendary Pink Dots, their song called Evolution. We did another full circle of sorts, concluding with the Japanese band Polysix and Each Life, Each End. It started off this sound collage with their Coelacanth is Android in the intro set. All right, now, closing us out is our final selection and the final movement, number 5, from Vangelis' Soil Festivities, Ambient Masterwork, which was released in 1984, a great year for music, as was, in fact, that whole decade. And as further proof of that, stay tuned for Songs from the Squid Pod with DJ Savoir Faire for a feature-packed one-hour trip back to the music of the 1980s. Only here on WMFO in Medford, Tufts freeform, non-commercial, community, and even sometimes educational radio.
Due to COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.